People once believed that when someone dies, a crow carries their soul to the land of the dead. But sometimes, just sometimes, the crow can bring that soul back to put the wrong things right. I thought that Eric was the last. I never imagined there would be another.
What's going on, gals and ghouls, freaks and geeks? It is I, Richard Zahm, with Corpses for Conversation. And like always, in the room with me,
I'm Toxic Jay.
And we also have... Hey, wait a minute, man. Where's Ed?
Ed? Are you there?
Ed, are you in the room? What's going on, dude? I just saw you a second ago.
What the fuck?
What the hell's that noise?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Evil Ed here. Hey, what the fuck? Amber Heard? Who are you guys? So, hey! Stop touching me! Hey, Amber, get off my bed! No!
Dude, look at his video feed. Ed, what the fuck's going on? You all right, man? Are you catching that, Toxic J? What the fuck is that? Dude, what the hell's going on over there?
What the fuck?
Hey, hold on. Who the hell is this on the channel? What are you doing on Ed's mic?
Hello, Toxic J. Zom. This is the Motion Picture Task Force. We've come for your friend and co-host, Evil Ed.
Holy fuck, dude, you gotta be kidding me. Dude, Toxic J, you hear this?
We heard he was planning to speak on and say some unsavory things about DC.
The fuck?
We simply cannot allow this. Now don't forget...
Get back, Ed!
Ed's only be taken in for a briefing. Once that's done, the choice is his whether he wants to continue pursuing this or not. If he does, well, let's just say there may be consequences without being able to attend a movie anymore or speak on the matter. And if that's the case, well, your friend Ed has made his choice. Now, as for you gentlemen, heed this as a warning. We will be listening. We will be in touch.
The fuck? This is too weird, man. Dude, what the shit was that?
I don't know. I don't know what I heard. I'm still trying to process it.
All right, well, we had a plan to bring you guys an episode of the DCFU. It was an episode designed around good old Evil Ed, where we just obliterate DC films because their live action stuff is just simply atrocious. We were going to go into the, you know, the nuts and bolts of what it was and how we enjoyed the animated films more than we did the live action films. But now that that's not happening.
Plan B is on plan B.
Yeah, we had another episode planned already after this. We are doing a segment now called The Movie Disposal, where we pick a movie, dissect it, go over it as to what made it work, what made it not work, what we liked about it, what could have been enhanced, what could have been taken out. Pretty much just us on the cutting room floor of what we thought worked and didn't work for the film. The Movie Disposal was a brainstorm of good old Toxic J. So with that, I'm going to pass it over to you, dude, so you can let them know what movie we're talking about.
Thanks, Zom. This next movie that we're going to talk about, in my opinion, doesn't need all the hate as it usually gets. Unfortunately, it does, given the previous film. So today, Zom, we're going to actually talk about the 1996 sequel, The Crow, City of Angels.
Oh man, I remember when this was initially announced, and I mean, even though the unfortunate events that befell the first Crow and us unfortunately losing the charismatic one himself, Brandon Lee, son of the best martial artist on the planet and action film star Bruce Lee.
Facts.
He left his lasting mark with the Crow. Even though he passed away, I honestly thought that was going to be it, that there wasn't going to be a moving forward with the series. But much like we learned about Hollywood, they like to recreate what was already not broken. So when they initially announced it, I was kind of skeptical. But when they kind of showed you like the trailer and the layout, I was actually intrigued. I'm like, this doesn't look half bad. I think this might rock and roll and look pretty good. And of course, as the movie came out, well.
And honestly, Zom, that's actually... It does not fall on or to blame the director nor the writer. It's good old Hollywood and dipping their fucking dick where it doesn't belong.
Kind of like the one dude associated to the movie who's been iconic in getting in trouble for putting his pole in holes that don't need to be put there.
Mr. Harvey Weinstein, of course.
Christ, man.
Let me give you a little backstory. We're not going to talk so much about the first one. It's already been told before. Maybe down the line we will. The original movie was a 1994 classic, very influential film of the 90s with the dark and goth elements, based on the 1989 Crow comics by James Earl Barr. It was actually a four-part miniseries. Then years later, they finished the fifth issue, bringing the series to conclusion. Obviously, very little resources from a small independent comic company decided to make this film. No one thought of nothing, maybe a quick buck or two. This movie was a surprise hit, made over $50 million at the box office, which is chump change now. But you got to remember, back then, it was a big thing. So, of course, like we said earlier, Hollywood being Hollywood, let's capitalize on it. Let's make a sequel. And this was actually, tell you the truth, this was the only Crow movie I ever seen in theaters. So I was super hyped about it. I read the novel, the actual movie novel, before the film ever got released.
I got a couple questions for you, Dr. Shoot. J. The comic series itself, I didn't know it was a five-part, I guess, series, one. Number two, I did read, I don't know if I'm correct with the figure or not, but something about like the initial movie, The Crow, like you mentioned, because we're not going in-depth on part one. We're talking about part two, which is City of Angels. But I think the first Crow was made on like, what, $230,000? And it grossed that huge figure of money. And I was like, well, that's amazing.
It was low. But yeah, you're right. It made its money back and profit.
So, okay. And then my last question before I pass it back over to you, because I'm intrigued. Because again, even though I read comic books, I'm not always on the up and up with what was cool in culture at the time. And I never officially, I'm going to probably get hate for this, but I never read the comic series based upon The Crow.
Like, it's okay. That's why I'm here, buddy. Yeah. I know you know your stuff, and that's why I love you for it. But sometimes your facts are a little mixed up. Yes. But don't worry, I got
just
your
like
back.
My brain.
I got your back.
But I'm gonna go back and definitely read it now and follow like how you said. I want to be more in depth on the knowledge and read it and see where it's coming from. So my other question for you was: it independently released by Obar, or did it get picked up by like a small time publishing company?
You know what? I'm not 100% sure on that, but either way, it still had very minimum help. Actually, distribute the actual novel itself was Pocket Books. Was a small little company.
Okay, so it was like a small time company to pick up. That's pretty dope.
You know, I don't believe that they're, I don't think they're a company now. I'm not 100% sure. So I actually bought the novel, the graphic novel, the first one. Ooh, I bought it for $10.
Dude, that's a great deal.
Yeah, it's a great deal. So, and ever since then, I've been hooked. But like I said, going back to the second one, I kept up to date with it. It had small little clippings in Fangoria and like little entertainment weekly magazines, whatever it was out there at the time. I think I was in seventh grade, if I'm not mistaken, when that movie came out. As bad, I don't want to say the movie was bad. It was just mishandled. There was so much story in depth, like everything, all to be gutted by a Weinstein. All he wanted was, you know what? I'm going to play it safe. I'm going to make a carbon copy of the original. You can't do that.
Yeah, especially with, Brandon Lee. Like, I don't care how great of an actor you are. There is times in life where you cannot recapture lightning in a bottle twice.
No, you cannot.
And his dad, being the martial artist that he is, even though there's other martial artists now who do phenomenal stuff and Jason Statham and all that, they're respectively in their own lane. They cannot hold a candle to Bruce freaking Lee. Just like people, when it comes to The Crow, no matter how many different iterations there is, and big ups to good old Mark, who was in the TV series, who did his best, and it was really good, but you still can't reproduce what Brandon Lee did. You never be able to. You never will be able to, ever.
And see, the thing about this movie, though, the writer, David S. Goyle, and the director, Tim Pope, had so much passion for this movie. They literally went on message boards at the time to figure out what fans wanted to see in a sequel. They cared what the fan base wanted, and everyone was excited about it. All they said was something fresh, but you can keep the original elements that made the first one great, but tell your own story. They wrote multiple scripts, multiple different endings, different stories. At one point, the character Sarah was actually supposed to be resurrected as the Crow. Another one was supposed to be actually a brother and sister, like the brother coming back to avenge their, you know, and then they finally settled on for a father-son relationship.
Dude, that would have been wicked if they really went with the narrative of having Sarah's character come back as the Crow. I think that would have been a unique idea.
Of course, yeah. And I mean, you know what originally sold me though? You have, well, I didn't know it at the time, but you had a yellow Power Ranger, the Deftones, Iggy Pop, and the Punisher.
Go with God.
God's gonna sit this one out.
Yeah.
How good can you get, you know?
You had a great cast. You had a good band that was before the time of them being well known. And then again, like you just mentioned, Truey, who was the Yellow Ranger.
I got more.
From the Power Rangers series. And I'm hoping I'm not butchering that name. I can hear Ed screaming in my head. If I butchered it, I'm sorry. But
that's why I'm not saying her name, because I don't want to butcher it.
Yeah, I'm a fan of hers. I thought she was amazing in the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. I mean, that was a benchmark standard for the 90s for kids that liked that kind of stuff. And I think this was like the only other major movie she was in before her untimely death later on a couple years after the fact. And she was amazing in the movie.
She was the most vile character in the gang.
Knocked it out the park to me. I mean, I thought she was creepy and cool.
And I don't know if you know this, maybe some of our listeners, actually Iggy Pop was originally supposed to play the part of Fun Boy in the original, but he turned it down due to his touring schedule at the time.
I mean, I can see him being in part one, but it would have probably thrown off the movie a little bit.
Yeah, and I think at the time he was battling drug addiction, so he knew when to, like, hey, you know what? I can't do this right now.
Yeah, on you mentioning Iggy Pop, I'm actually glad you did, because he is one of the reasons why I like the movie. How he portrayed it, how he threw in that little bit of, like, rock and roll lifestyle into it that brought it to life on a big screen. I thought, one, he played it really well. Two, he just looked freaking phenomenal because he's Iggy freaking Pop. And three, the best part about it, and I'm jumping up ahead a little bit here, when you see him roll in on the warehouse scene where he's on that bike, that style of bike and that style of look, in my head, I'm like, that's what that Crow character should have looked like right then and there, because Iggy Pop rolling up on a bicycle to like a destroyed warehouse building just looked badass.
Well, you know, considering that I do things like have my balls set on fire, get thrown in a pond, right, and drowned, and snort huge lines of black cocaine from the top of a motorcycle adorned with a naked blonde chick being fucked in the ass by death, it was a stretch.
Just straight up badass.
I actually have the movie playing right now in the background just to get in the mood. What did you think of Judah? I think the actor's name is Richard Brooks, if I'm not mistaken. The lead drug dealer.
Yeah, Judah I found fascinating because I saw, personally for me, I saw like Blade, vampire, bad guy vibes and a little bit of like Black Panther strong character vibes as a villain. So I really liked how he came across. He wasn't like too creepy, but he was like on the level where you knew he was a silent mover. Like he knew his stuff and you can be in serious trouble messing with him, but he never got overexcited. He kept his emotions in control, which made the psychopathic part of it really present. You're like going, dude, this guy's out there, but he's so out there, he's calm and okay with it.
Which was kind of weird because like, I agree with everything you had said, but towards the last act of the movie, like the whole character demeanor changed and I didn't like it. I liked the whole strong, silent type. And he wouldn't stop talking towards the end. I'm like, dude, shut up. You know, you're ruining it.
Yeah, I think he might have won. I think, I don't want to say character wise, but I'm probably thinking direction from the director to the actor probably said, well, now that you have the power, you might want to go a little bit in a different direction to bring it forth. And I agree with what you're saying. I think it actually damaged the presence of him embodying that character at that point. It threw it off.
No, you're right. It just, I don't know. It just, I mean, it was tolerable, but like, yeah, like if you look him in different scenes, he's like you said, cool, collective, you know, trying to do that whole sex appeal thing, sidekick, the future or the fortune teller that gouged out her eyes. I thought that was pretty creepy.
Yeah. He also, trying to see other references I saw there where he looked really cool. And you can correct me if I'm wrong here, because I'm probably not going to have the information. But I was also seeing like that it looked like he had drawn inspiration, or they were pulling inspiration character wise, where he reminded me of one of the other singers and bandmates from The Prodigy. He was kind of pulling off the vibes where he, for me personally, he kind of looked like the dude from Seven Dust, the lead singer.
I could see that. Yeah.
Right. And most definitely I was pulling hardcore bad mofo vibes where I was like, this has Morpheus from the first Matrix written all over it.
Yeah, I could see that too.
So I was like, that whole correlation bubble of all those characters, I mean, I was just like, man, they're pulling inspiration from everywhere. Cause the character itself was really cool. Like I really liked it. There was other aspects with his associated characters in there that I didn't really like. I thought it was comical, but I wasn't a big fan of.
Okay. So right before we get on to the character of Ash, I know you wanted you, we talked about this before we started recording. What did you think of Nemo, AKA the Punisher, AKA also known as Thomas Jane?
Dude, the fact,
sorry to cut you off. His image was like some 70s glam rock. I don't know. It didn't work. It just looked really perverted.
It was bad and not in a good way. It was like Hollywood at 3 a.m. She's stumbling out of a whorehouse bad.
Well, that's where he was, kind of.
Yes. But what I saw, again, pulling references from different movies, I saw lead character from Dino Crisis, lead character from Jurassic World. I saw freaking, what's that one? The horrible wig they put on Uncle Fester in Adam's Family Values.
Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, did you? Okay. So do you know when he pulls up to the strip joint and I think he took a sniff of the drug and then his head tilted back and the wig fell off?
Yeah.
That actually wasn't supposed to happen, but the director liked it and kept it in the film.
Oh, it was great. it added to the fact that you knew that it was just a persona he was carrying within the character within the movie, which was fantastic.
That was a horrible wig too, though.
It was a terrible wig. I was just really taken aback. I'm like going, oh my God, this is Thomas Jane. This is the first iteration of the Punisher. Talk about having to go through punishment when you're beginning as an actor trying to get whatever good part you can get. I mean, he went through hell and back just for doing that part.
Well, yeah, like now, like the moment I saw his version of the Punisher, all I could think about it, it's like, oh man, that guy's whacking off in a strip joint.
True. Very true. I was like, whoa. I mean, it was convincing enough, though. I don't know what source material he pulled from to be able to rock and roll that, but it was convincing enough.
It felt a little awkward because my dad took me to watch this movie. So at that time, I was like, what? I mean, I already knew about all that stuff at that time, but still just like, I'm just sitting there. I'm looking over to the side. I'm like, oh, this is awkward, you know?
I mean, I can't picture that because I've never been in the movie theater with my dad. That's one thing I will say. My dad was never a big movie guy. So like, I never actually seen a movie with him.
Okay, I'll give you the differences between the movies, the first movie, the second movie. But before we get into that, What'd you think of Vincent Perez's portrayal as Ash Corvin?
Oh my God. Okay, so this one's hard for me. On these episodes, you guys know we're legendary for being drunken bastards when it comes to the Haterade. We break out the kegs, we break out the Haterade moonshine, we go full tilt on it. I have to be semi-sober when it comes to this because I think he's a great actor. I think the immense pressure that was put on him to do his best to try to pull this character across vividly shows on the big screen. He looked very stiff, very this will make or break my career type of feeling on his face. Because for me, in most of all the scenes he was in, it just looked like he was very, very forcing the agenda to try to, how you said, recapture what Harvey Weinstein wanted in the character, also trying to play to the fan base and trying to make sure he secures his job at the same time. So he was under immense pressure. And because of that, it affected the character portrayal in the film. Not his acting, but it affected the character portrayal in the film. It just looked very generic. And like I said, he's a French-Swedish actor, I believe. And he was
French.
He was a little on the unknown circuit at the time because they initially pulled him from an audition because they saw him in a play. When he did the whole character iteration and bringing it forward, I think I mentioned it to you before we recorded the episode, because he has a French and Swedish background, he put a lot of like mime into the Crow and it didn't carry over really well because he put like that, you know, that street humor they do into it. And it didn't give it that grit it needed for what we expected for what the Crow was. He's a great actor, like I said, but the direction of what they were probably telling him, and then again, the reshoots like you're talking about and the editing and all that, it probably damaged the true iteration and direction he was wanting to go. I think creatively, he was probably stifled, but he was so damn nervous for not messing it up because it's shoes that were impossible to fill. One, just absolutely impossible to fill. You try to go for the ride and hang on the best you can. And that's where I'm going to leave it at. I think he hung on the best he can and did what he tried to do. There is fans of it. There is not fans of it. I'm somewhere in the middle. I enjoyed certain scenes, but a lot of the other stuff I didn't like. But I don't punish him as the actor. I think, honestly, it was out of his control.
Wow. Okay. I'm a little surprised that you didn't have any Haterade today. Wow. You just kind of had like little sips. Okay.
Yes.
I'll take that. You know, on it. I like this portrayal. There were some scenes that were a little clunky, but I don't think that was his fault. But I do agree with you. I think he was a little nervous because trying to fill the shoes.
I would have been.
You know, but what I liked about the writing, the original writing anyways. So for the junkies out there that don't know, this movie was originally 2 hours and it had a lot more story than what we got in the final film. It was different before all the editing. It was more about sorrow and being lost, and it was an emotional journey rather than revenge. And if you think about it, the difference between Eric Draven and Ash Corvin, Eric Draven was a skilled martial artist, even though he didn't really see as much of like that in the first film. This one, Ash Corvin is more of a brute strength fighter. I'm just gonna run you over till I get who I have to get. I could see the differences, some similarities, but like you said, Zom, it was out of their control. And you know what? It was not fair.
No, it wasn't. That's what I'm saying. I feel very bad because I truly believe he tried his damnedest to put what he needed to put into that character for the portrayal. But it just didn't translate well across the screen. Because like you said, of the revisions, the rewriting, the re-editing, the reshooting, it damaged what this movie was supposed to come across as. It stifled it a lot.
This was a good story that was destroyed by greedy film executives.
Yeah.
Plain and simple. That's what it was.
Oh, you bastard.
I mean, for even when I watched a little bit of the snippets here and there of like YouTube feeds I was picking off of, and you even explained it prior to us putting the episode together to talk about it, the original story based upon the comic was far better than what the movie iteration was. The first couple were pretty much on track with what the graphic novel was, and it was going to be a smooth transition. It was going to be a completely different film. We as fans were probably going to eat it up and be like, oh man, awesome. But like you said, the fat cats and bureaucrats of Hollywood got their teeth on it and bit out chunks bigger than what needed to be and damaged the film.
Now, what Zom is referring to even though this film is not based on the novel, but there were actually some nods and elements. So originally, Eric Draven was a mechanic, but they changed it for the movie to become a musician, a rock star. And this one, City of Angels, he's a mechanic. So it's kind of like, yeah, it was like a little homage to the original comic.
Let me talk about, because I need this. You mentioned Haterade. I gotta throw a little spice in there. I gotta jump on some of the loopholes in the film that kind of pissed me off. And one, even though I'm 100% grateful this is a movie based upon the City of Angels, Los Angeles, my hometown, I love the cinematography. I love the photography. I like the layout of what they made the city look like. I like the color tones, even though they used a lot of yellows in this one compared to the very dark blue tones in the original first Crow movie.
So the original, actually, if you think about it, was all dark, dark blue and rain. So in the second one, like you said, bright colors, the setting was, if you look, pure smoke.
A lot of Los Angeles smog.
Exactly. And for some reason, a lot of broken glass everywhere. I'm like, and honestly, the setting, even though the original was based in Detroit, City of Angels was based in Los Angeles. I don't know about you, Zon, but it didn't really feel like Los Angeles. I mean, we live in Los Angeles, so we would know, you know?
Well, there was definitely snippets there where I saw it. Like, we saw the most infamous, the Jesus Saves sign that's in downtown LA that's iconic in a lot of movies. I like what they did with the whole presence of what they did for the shot in the movie. I did see. Now, have you seen the music video of Marilyn Manson, The Beautiful People?
Yes.
That tunnel he crawls out of in the ballerina tutu is the same tunnel you see Ash's character of The Crow come out of. It's the same damn tunnel.
Sure.
Yes.
I gotta look into that.
It's the same tunnel. Because I swear that's the same bridge area they did it. I could be mistaken, but it looked spot on identical. Now, with the color tones and the LA smog, and I like how they put that together, here's where things kind of threw me off. Again, being a native Los Angelino, I was like, there's no way. You just mentioned right now that they played homage to the fact that in this one, they show the characters a mechanic. Now, yeah. You see when he comes back from the dead and he just magically walks over to his garage that's in the freaking ghetto side of LA. Am I to believe he just walked into a garage that's in a very bad and dangerous area, has no lock on the door, and his beautifully pristine Ducati multi-$1,000 motorcycle is there? It had it been vandalized, it had it been taken. It's Los Angeles, for Christ's sakes. Some group of cholos, gangsters, whoever, would have jacked his ass straight out. That bike would have not been there.
That bike. Hey, no, you wanted it back, homie.
It's right here. Follow me, homie. Yeah.
Oh, shit! Yeah.
That's my bike, huh?
Got it! You got knocked the fuck out!
Well, first of all, I guess at that point, it didn't matter. He didn't care. He was dead. Secondly, yeah, actually, no, you're right. Like
Los Angeles, an unattended Ducati motorcycle worth thousands of dollars in that neighborhood, knowing we know that neighborhood, there's no way, bro. There's no way. They would have jacked that fool. He would have been one walking on foot going after motherfuckers Crow.
He'd be taking the bus.
Exactly. He'd be getting down via the MTA.
What really bothers me about the ending and the rewrites and everything else that just went wrong with this film because of Weinstein was the love story between Ash and Sarah.
Now, I thought that was just creepy and not in a good way. It was just off. It was just weird.
Well, obviously, within the edits, you don't see them do anything. And, you know, like it was just there in the original story. They fell in love. And I don't know if you were. Well, I can remember watching the trailers when the movie first came out. They were kissing and they were about to get it on and everything. That's not in the movie. They completely scrapped the whole love relationship between those two, which I really wanted to see. Like, God knows why he did that. I don't know why. Like, you know, well, Eric Draven couldn't resurrect her with his girl. Like, we won't do it with Ash. Well, fall in love with another person, whatever. I don't know. I'm just rambling. But the fact is, like, yeah, like, why would they do that?
I think I understood when it came to that as to why, because there was such a correlation between Draven's version of the Crow and Sarah having such a close relationship that with this, even though it's a different person being the Crow, because she has that relationship with the character that is the Crow, it was going to be too incestually weird. Like, it's like a family member you're messing with. So I think they didn't want to go that route.
Well, actually, I've read reviews and certain YouTube pages. They kind of mentioned something like that. The reason why she fell for Ash is because it just reminded her so much of Eric. So there could be some truth to what you're saying. But, it's never it hasn't been officially said.
So let me ask you this, since we're on the subject matter and I had a good notion come to my head here. Based upon that, from the first Crow into the City of Angels, primarily because of the character Sarah and how you explained they had this relationship that didn't fully get elaborated upon on the City of Angels movie, I had no idea that Sarah in this portrayal, and I don't know how it is for the graphic novel, and you can school me on this, I didn't know that she was almost on the skew line of being a medium. Like, she was an empath. She was able to really pick up on and read energy.
Not that I've read. From what I remember, I read the book maybe about 4 months ago again, and now I already forgot. But Sarah was more of a main character in the movie rather than the book.
Okay.
So she wasn't really involved. Like, there was no mention of Shelley. Not that I could remember, but yeah, they fleshed out her character more in the movie. I liked her character more in the movie than in the actual novel.
Yeah, like you said, they don't mention Shelley, but the cat's there. So I guess that's a bonus.
Yeah, I mean, look at the cat. The cat does look old. So if I had to give a guess for the time period, I'm not 100% sure. So don't bite my head off, people. It was probably maybe 15 to 20 years from the Eric Draven storyline.
I'm trying to remember too, and again, I'm probably going to get eaten alive when we put this out there. Was the cat's name Milo?
Gabriel.
Gabriel, okay.
Gabriel.
It sounded something similar. Yeah, of course you guys didn't come at me, whatever. Gabriel.
Yeah, no, it was Gabriel. I don't know. It stuck with me because how Brandon Lee said Gabriel in the movie. So every time I say Gabriel, I have to say it like Brandon Lee, like Gabriel. You know, I don't know. It just stuck with me.
So see, there's one of those points I'm trying to connect. They don't talk about how she has this inapt ability to be able to read energy. I saw a little bit in part one where she was very good with her woman intuitions, where she could feel something coming on or happening. But you see that very pronounced in City of Angels. And I'm like, where did she develop this power? She almost has this power that's similar to the witch character in the movie. The one homegirl who has the eyes that were she gouged her eyes out because she was seeing all these visions and stuff.
Yeah, you know what? You're right. In the first one, women's intuition. And now she's seeing visions and stuff. I don't know. Maybe she was, I guess, within that time period, she develop superpowers. I don't know.
My hypothesis to this, and I'm just taking a educated comic book guy guess here, and I don't know if it ties into the Crow TV show, but I think what it is she was such an important part of the lives between Draven and Shelley. I believe somehow she was touched with the grace of the power ability from the Crow. I think she was touched a little bit with Draven's senses and Shelley's senses, and she was tapped into that side of the world, so she was able to pick up on it a little easier after she had that experience with them going into City of Angels.
Possibly. I'd never even thought about that, actually. Yeah, that could actually possibly, yeah.
The hair raid's doing his magic, dude. I'm getting awkward and thinking all ingeniously.
What did you think of the last act? Okay, let me tell you why you're thinking about it. To this day, even when rewatching it, I'm sorry, I cannot watch Judah kill the Crow. I always have to fast forward it. That part just is really depressing to me. I can't watch that part. I don't know why.
I thought it was a good part in the film because they really re-embodied what, if you take the power away from the Crow, you take the power away from the person who was brought back from the dead to right the wrongs. What I didn't like about the ending personally, one for me, it made absolutely no sense. One, just didn't make no sense to me whatsoever. The other part to that was I didn't understand the whole sequencing of if you've already lost the powers and it got transferred into Judah, I'm supposed to expect to believe that you're going to have some epiphany, Alfred Hitchcock in the Birds moment, where you're going to have this plethora of crows come down upon you like the bats around Batman, fly through you and utterly annihilate this dude. That threw me completely off. I was like, I had to stop the movie and go, what in the actual fuck is going on?
Well, once again, rewriting, reshoots, everything. So the original ending, Ash makes, which they should have done because it was so brilliant. So what was his son's name? David? Dave.
Sonny.
His son, I don't know.
Didn't he call him Sonny?
I don't think so. Anyways. Okay. So after he loses his power, his son tells him it's time to come back, you know, to the other side where so they can be together. But he decided not to and wanted to stay with Sarah. Just like that line in the movie. Well, what happens when I'm done? Well, you go back. Well, what happens if I don't want to go back? Like, holy shit, that totally changes like the demeanor of the film for me. I'm like, they could have gone that route. But look what happened. Sarah ends up dying. So therefore, he can't be with the love of his life and his son. And he's free to roam the earth alone. He can't die. So he's essentially immortal. At the end, he actually goes to the church to meet the priest. And the priest goes, what are you doing here? He goes, I have nowhere else to go. That's a sad ending. But
it is a powerful ending, too.
It is.
He becomes like a wandering soul. He's like in his own form of purgatory.
He dealt with the justice that he needed to do, but also lost two important people in his life, and he's still alive. Like, why couldn't you do that ending? That would have been so good.
True. Very true. I got to rewind on this because I'm glad you mentioned it because I totally wasn't thinking about it. No offense to the actress who played Sarah, because I know, again, it's not her fault. It was the direction she was told. But if that wasn't the most BS, cheesy, dying scenario of Romeo, Juliet, piece of shit I've ever seen, she had so much time to look down and go, I'm running into a big ass knife. I could probably stop or take a step and step the fuck out of the way. But no, I'm going to fall upon the sword. Are you fucking kidding me? Are you serious? Talk about unbelievable drivel. I was like, wow, that was horrible.
Yeah, that's the same thing. I'm like, really? I'm like, what? Can you just slightly move to the right or the left, you know? And then when she gets stabbed, she's like shocked. I'm like, why are you shocked?
How are you shocked? You had plenty of time, homegirl. You had plenty of time.
Once again, like I said, we said it once and we said it again throughout this episode. Constant reshoots, reworks. Like the fight scene between Ash and Callie was actually supposed to be a lot more physical and a lot longer. But no, they cut it down to a few minutes. It was pretty cool. He threw out the window, you know, but yes. there was more to it. Once again, I'm going back to the original cut. She's crawling bloody with a broken back and saying to Ash, kill me. And he goes, no, I'm not going to kill you. I'm going to just let you suffer.
Dude, that would have been so good to put in there. That would have been like another powerful scene right there.
Once again, Hollywood thinking they know movies.
Not to mention, to give props to the fact that homegirl, stunt woman, not only just the actress, the stunt woman, coming from guys who are old school wrestling fans and love hardcore deathmatch wrestling, talk about a fucking bump she took. Oh my God, to skin hit a freaking car from like 30 feet up.
Shh, little baby. Shh. Don't say a word.
Daddy's gonna buy you a big black bird!
Dude, she took one hell of a bump.
I wish, so there's this edit on YouTube. I don't remember the guy who did it, but he took all like the promo photos, clips from the trailers, stuff that weren't in the movie, and he edited it to the version that the director originally envisioned. Like, it was so good that the director, Tim Pope, reached out to him and said, thank you. This was close to the original version that I wanted. It's not the best quality, but you could still make out what things are happening. And I wish maybe Shout Factory or someone else can get, like, they don't have the original cut released. It's like, I don't think they think fans care about it, but they do.
You know, I'm going to say this as well, because now we're going back and forth talking about more of the stuff in the movie. I know you didn't like watching how they pinned the crow up and it lost its, you know, it technically lost its life and he lost the powers. But I like how they did that while he was scaling the building like he was a freaking member of the Assassin's Guild. Again, going back to Assassin's Creed, because it looked very Assassin's Creed cathedral. You would expect to see Daredevil pop up and go, what are you doing here? The bump he took.
I like that, yeah.
The bump he took, just falling and just cascading down from the church. What pissed me off in that scene, and I'm sure you're going to agree with me with this, because we just talked about another bump that was horribly trashed with that crazy one about Homegirl getting tossed off out the window and taking the car bump. You're expecting me to believe Ash's character as the Crow takes this humongous backdrop from all the way up top, halfway up the top of this giant ass church, and he's going to land gingerly like a video game. And like a soft flower hayloft, there's no serious impact. There's no him becoming a crater in the streets of LA. He just magically floated down and barely went. You didn't hear no. That got me mad, because anybody who has seen the legendary stuntman, freaking Jackie Chan in Police Story, when he took that scaling pole drop and hit that kiosk stand at the end, I mean, that thing was obliterated. You heard wood cracking. You heard him go, boom, and he just. Bye. Hit all hard. That was believable. The bump he took from outside, from that high on the church, and you expect me to believe he like he landed in a bed, a Tempur-Pedic bed. You better get your dumb ass on out of here. That was terrible. It was horrible. That's it took true. All the believability out of it. Like, I understand you're supposed to skew reality a little bit because it is based upon a graphic novel series, but it's like, my thing is, why damage it to those ends? And we know why it got damaged, because the wrong people had their hands in the cookie jar, not knowing when to stop.
True.
It just didn't do well. And then again, the beginning of the movie, Toxic J, compared to the first movie, I think the rolling out of how they show how he initially gets killed was done completely out of order. It didn't make no sense. You see like little snippets of it, and then they show you it after the fact. I'm like, they kind of showed you that in the beginning, what you saw, what happened to Eric Draven's character. And then he revisits it in the flashbacks once he comes back to life. They did it completely ass backwards in City of Angel. It made no sense. And then he comes out of the water like Jesus Christ on the freaking LA riverfront. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, what's going on?
Like I said, really bad editing, because
it was bad. That, I mean, again, it's not their fault. Their hand was forced because of the executive producers pinned on it. But I mean, personally, even though I know, you know, people need jobs, you want your credibility, you don't want your body of work tarnished, for something as big time as that movie was, of it being the Crow, and you're the next installment after what the legendary groundwork Brandon Lee laid on. Me personally, if I was attached, I would have quit right then and there. I said, no, I'd rather take the bump for knowing I quit and have you guys rain shit and hellfire on me than me give this to you, knowing that it's not going to work. Even if I got to start cranking out straight to DVDs the rest of my freaking life, at least I know my integrity was intact.
You walked away with your pride.
Yeah. And it's depressing to talk about, because I had high hopes from, again, it's in Los Angeles. I'm a Los Angelino. I had a lot of high hopes for the movie. There was segments of it I enjoyed, but like you said, because of the revisions, the rewriting, the re-editing, it just damaged the film. The only thing I found hilariously funny, and I'm going to come back to you so you can see where I'm going. Thomas Jane going into the skin cinema film place to have his tokens in the window screen.
Yeah,
prior to that, when you see the one customer come up to the booth and he's talking to the guy and you see him turn around and walk out, I swore to God that was Kevin Sorbo.
I don't know.
Just like Kevin Sorbo. I was like, what the hell is Hercules doing in this bad boy? Like, he's just getting an extra credit in real quick.
And at the time, Hercules was still on the air too.
Yeah, I was like, going, Kevin Sorbo's in this movie, but like, even he has his head down real quick. I don't want no one to recognize me. It's a quick payday real quick. Let me get out of here real quick.
I got to put money down on that Porsche.
I'm facts, dude. I want to be able to buy one of those Ducatis. Like, ah, shit.
So when the movie released, actually, it was actually released August 30th, 1996. And it was actually number one at the box office. So it did fairly well. But as the weeks went on, it kind of dropped off the chart, and it only made like half of what the original made, which is pretty fucking sad.
Yeah, again, there was high hopes walking into it. People were initially excited for the premise of what it does because it's another Crow movie. But as soon as they watched it, they realized it was all lights and mirrors. It was fluff. A lot of it was fluff because of the re-editing and the reshooting. It was presented in a way to entice you like they do with movie trailers, but it fell flat. Like, I think I even mentioned this to you when we were talking about before we recorded it. Aside from the Deftones, the music they used for the movie was completely off to the cadence of what the movie was. The music was just, it didn't make no sense. I don't know why they made those choices. Compared to how the movie was laying out and the music they chose to play, it was just completely off. It made no sense. No sense whatsoever.
Are you talking about the whole soundtrack or just some songs? Because then I would have to disagree with you. I didn't think the whole soundtrack was great. Probably the first few songs.
Other than Deftones, everything else was off.
Well, like I said, that part I'll probably disagree with you. Gold Dust Woman by Hole, I thought fit perfectly with the film. Okay, The White Zombie, I'm Your Boogeyman, questionable.
Questionable. You're talking to me. I'm a White Zombie Rob Zombie fan, and I love me some White Zombie or Rob Zombie. When they had him come out to I'm Your Boogeyman, I'm like, talk about shooting any credibility to the freaking character right then and there. I was mad. As a zombie fan, I was like, no, don't. How dare you? No.
I did like Filter's song as transforming into the Crow. I did like that. And I have to admit, I did like, and it's really depressing. And it's in the movie, This Lonely Place by Bush.
I don't even remember Bush being in it.
Do you remember the scene where Sarah was taking a shower? Of course, everybody does at that time. The song in the background is playing it.
Got it now. Okay, yeah. All right, yeah. See, it's been such a minute since I've even listened to Bush. I had no
idea. Bro, it's okay. You were focusing on a Naked Sarah. I get it. I was too.
I was checking out those red wings, man.
Yeah. Actually, for a long time, I wanted like, man, I want crow wings in the back of my back. I was so invested in this movie as a kid for a few reasons. One, this was the first movie I ever went to see with my dad that I've ever seen him cry. Of course, now since he's a little older, he cries all the time. But back then, you know, working out, lifting weights, you know, big macho man type guy, for a guy to cry, I was like, holy shit, this is real, because of the whole father-son relationship. And, you know, you can relate to that. And
I can understand that, yeah.
And second, I was so supportive of this movie when I was in junior high. Like I said, I was so obsessed with the movie, not throwing out my age again. Do you remember, Zom, you remember that cinema store called Suncoast?
What I tell you about throwing out the age? What have I told you about throwing out the age? You going to make me reach through this.
People need to know.
I actually remember Suncoast.
Okay, so I bought two t-shirts. I bought The Crow, City of Angels, the original movie poster, a portrait of Ash as the Crow.
I have a poster as well.
I swear to God, I think it is the poster in your back room. I had the exact same shirt. And I actually had that Blacklight poster too.
Yeah, I never got rid of that because it's very expensive now.
For an entire year, I kid you not, Zom, I wore those two shirts every day for a whole year. I washed it every day or every other day. And, you know, people thought I was like some dirty, poor kid. No, I just was so in love with this movie and the character itself that, you know, I didn't have a lot of money back then. Like, I was just trying to be supportive however I could.
I just like how the fact you just throw it out there, Suncoast Video, and the fact that, you know, I'm going to correlate to that. I remember Hollywood Video, 50-50 Video, Blockbuster Video, Tower Records, Sam Goody. Oh, I remember all the good stuff back then.
Yeah. Well, how can you not mention it? I mean, people like the 80s. Like, I liked all the old stores where I can go in and shop instead of downloading it.
I know. Just, God, but I'm not that old, damn it. I'm going to live forever like one of the crows. I just got to make sure I put the bird away somewhere and keep it safe and away from harm. And
yeah, you don't want Judah to come back.
No, I mean, I'll pimp slap that fool. I ain't afraid no damn Judah.
So one thing I forgot to mention, and you had mentioned it earlier, You know how when the crows attacked him and you all see this blurry effect and everything? Originally, that wasn't supposed to happen. The sequence was supposed to happen, but Judah was actually supposed to be picked to the bone, bloody and all, by the crows.
Oh, that'd have been awesome.
Of course, that did not happen, and we got some fucking bad CGI.
Now, I'm going to say these two things because there were things I enjoyed in the film, and they're around Iggy Pop. I loved the crow tattoo he had on his chest and how they showed you the design of what she did for the tattoo. It was actually two demons fighting one another.
I was going to say, phenomenal. It's not a crow. It's two demons fighting. Get it right.
Phenomenal for what they did and how they pulled it off. It looked awesome because it showed you the battle between good and evil. That premise there, really cool. Secondly, how they gave Iggy like a pseudo mock Viking death burial, Ash pushing him out in the water, and then he has the flower petals go around him and it shows the symbol of the crow. I was like, well, who else better deserving has it to get a kill off like that than Iggy Pop? That was freaking sweet. Just freaking sweet.
What ruined that scene for me? Do you remember when the lady was throwing flowers and then it just formed into the crow?
Yeah.
And then the editing right there was kind of bad because all of a sudden, boop, it just shows it. Like,
yeah,
they did. Yeah, they didn't pan out right. And it just went straight to that. I'm like, okay, that was bad editing right there.
Yeah. The one thing that made me laugh with Iggy Pop. And again, he's done some acting, but not a lot of acting. And in wrestling, no selling is a no-no. And when he gets kicked in the crotch by Sarah and he goes down momentarily for a few seconds and then he gets up acting like he never got kicked in the crotch. I was like, bro, you really going to no sell that like that? Like, really?
I don't know, man. He's all doped up the whole time. Maybe he just had no effect on him.
I'll be fair. Yes, I can agree with that. I will give it that. That'll be the saving grace right there.
I doubt he had a cup on, so.
Well, I guess that's the principle. Maybe you got to be kind of half doped out on some good edibles to enjoy the movie, knowing that the writing was redone and all that.
So what we're saying, everyone, this isn't a bad movie. It's just a misunderstood movie, not by the movie in general. It's just the behind the scenes.
You want to talk about bad movies? Wait until we talk about The Crow Salvation or The Crow Wicked Prayer.
Nah,
you want to talk about bad. We're going to cover those. We're going to talk about the whole flock of crows here. Those were, I'll take City of Angels all day, any day.
Well, I've seen The Crow Salvation. It's okay. It's like whatever. But I could not sit through Wicked Prayers.
Dude, Wicked Prayer had me cracking up for the simple fact that Danny Trejo was in it and David Boreanaz was in it. I could not stop laughing.
Wait, wasn't Dennis Hopper in that movie too? I think so.
He was the evil priest, I believe.
Yeah, and then like just like Edward Furlong's like expression, like, huh? What? I'm dead? Then like that he looked like, I don't know, it was just so stupid. Huh? What? I gotta get back at my killers, huh?
Oh, we are so gonna cover those movies. We have to. This is a whole saga series now. We're gonna
okay.
Oh my god.
First and foremost, before we do that, we have to figure out where Evil Ed is.
The hunt is on. You with all your creative abilities, you better get on the phone with your Ghostbusters pals. This is some sci-fi paranormal shit. We're going to have to contact John Constantine. We bring in all forms on ship. We got to get our boy back. Something went down. Something happened. Get a hold of Liam Neeson. He's gone through this with Taken.
Any other films that look like Taken?
I don't know. And then not to mention, right, you said the character's name was Corbin. And I think we initially talked about this at the beginning. I was like, is he related to wrestler Baron Corbin?
Or Happy Corbin now.
Or Happy Corbin. And I'm sitting there going, is he like, is Corbin Dallas the great-great-grandson of this Corbin because of the Fifth Element? I'm like, what the hell is going on here?
So actually the name wasn't really, well, obviously you don't know his last name in the film, but in the movie novel, that's where it's explained. As to what happened to Sarah's mom in the original film, she died of a drug overdose naked in an alley somewhere. And then after that, Sarah made her way down to L.A.
Or maybe he's related to Ash Ketchum from Pokemon.
Hey, they
I'm joking, y'all. I've taken it too far at that point.
I don't know, man. They got the same kind of hairstyle. Just Ash has a hat on.
Oh, yeah, well, Ash is a little emo. He's a little emo. Yeah. He is. Just touch emo. Just a little bit. Oh, man. Talk about a good episode. Talking about all this fun stuff. We really had high hopes for City of Angels. Like me and Talk to Jay have said, it's not a bad movie. It was just placated with unfortunate circumstances and events around it. That it technically had its own COVID bubble, and that COVID bubble was the Mount Rushmore of the Weinstein.
100%, man. Like, this could have been a million times better than what we got. And I hope, I don't care. I can be 50. I hope one day they can release the full original version. If it's out there. I don't know if it's out there yet or if they scrapped it or whatever, but I hope.
For all the remakes they are pumping out, you would figure, kind of like how we learned with good old Zack Snyder fighting for it, let the fans decide. Give us a true recut of that film with the other footage that's still there, because what's Weinstein going to do? He got no say-so in this. He's already serving his sentence for damaging the movie and his characteristics in real life.
And I actually follow Vincent Perez on Instagram, man, and he does not regret making this film at all. And the guy's such a humble guy, and he loves the fans that embraced him and saw for what he was, his time on set. And he appreciated it, and I'm glad.
I would love to see them give him another shot at it, not as the Crow, but have him be a character in the movie.
Like a detective or something, you know? Something.
Yeah, give him another shot at it.
Or if they had the original ending and he was roaming the earth, you know what I mean?
True. Now, before we get to wrapping up this episode, you guys are going to get the book in where good old Talks to Jay gives you all the source material you need to go over from the graphic novels and other things you should check out pertaining to the movie itself. I do want to say this. I'm going to throw out just a comic book fanboy prediction. I think personally, for the way the style of the movie was, and I know it's completely two separate universes, it would be freaking phenomenal for me personally to see the Crow come across either Blade or Batman at some point. I think that would be a unique story arc series right there.
The only crossover that I know of between the Crow and another comic character, there's a comic character called Hack and Slash meets the Crow. Other than that, none that I can remember. But yeah, I think
a dope team up with the Crow personally and Blade fighting the vampire underworld, because it's an association to the character, whoever it's going to be, of being the Crow, lost a loved one due to a vampire attack. I think that would be freaking cool if they did a correlation like that. That's just me and my comic book nerd brain. I would love that.
Well, hopefully with the remake, which they shouldn't, I'm sorry, I have to rant about this for a bit, but Lee, like, obviously we already know that what's his name, Bill Skarsgård, is going to play in the Crow reboot after development hell, constant like casting. I know Jason Momoa was cast for a bit.
Dude, he looked really cool in that picture. I was for it.
Okay, I'm going to drop some nerdness when it comes to that. Different story, please. Just give me a different story. The Eric Draven character be Brandon Lees. I don't want to see Eric Draven played by another character. No, I do not want to see that.
Yeah.
There are other stories in the Crow universe with other people. And like I said, so my bookend, I'll give you a few recommendations. So one is called Walking Nightmare. They're all by the Crow. Walking Nightmare, Dead Time. And the one I really love and which would be perfect for Jason Momoa, it's actually called The Crow, Flesh and Blood. Now, what this is, it's a little bit of a twist. The character is named Joshua Zane. He comes back 100 years later to hunt down the reincarnation of the people that killed him and his family. And it all takes place in one night. And he actually kind of looks like Jason Momoa with, you know, out the beard. And he spends half of his time without a shirt. And of course, you know, the ladies would love that. So he would be a perfect Joshua Zane, not an Eric Draven.
I can definitely see that. Like I said, I saw the picture that initially they put up of him on Twitter as a teaser. And I was like, oh my God, this looks phenomenal. I'm for this. And then can you say the other actor that just got recently casted? Because I know
Bill Skarsgård.
What?
Bill Skarsgård.
Okay. He's a phenomenal
Skarsgård. I can't say his last name. Sorry.
He's a phenomenal actor. I'm just worried about, I hope whatever portrayal, I mean, he's a great method actor, but I hope he can really catch that essence, because a lot of people have tried and they haven't been able to. I think the only person who got close to it was the Crow TV series when Mark stepped into the shoes for Eric Draven. That was probably the closest person you get to it. I think he did really well.
Mark DeCosco. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't look like that anymore, but back then, yeah, he actually looked kind of similar to Brandon Lee. So I could totally see that.
I liked the TV show. It was only a couple episodes. I think it was like maybe a season and a half long, but I really liked it. I thought for what they were able to do with the budget they were given, I really liked
it. It was called The Crow, Stairway to Heaven, actually. I think that's what it was called.
Yeah, I mean, again, yeah. I thought it was phenomenal. It was really good. All right, well, you guys got the source material there from good old Toxic J. He told you what to look at, what to enjoy, what to read. I say just do your due diligence. Check out that TV show. It will do no harm just to take a glance at it. Is there anything else we need to mention to the fans out there, Toxic J?
No. Until next time, CFC Junkies.
Yep, that's it for this episode. You guys have been fantastic. You heard us talk about the Crow City of Angels. We'll see you guys next time. I'm, of course, with the Zomba CFC podcast along with
Toxic J.
We'll see you guys next time. Just leave it like that. Question while I break my back.